From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. On today's show, Nebraska, the changing demographics of America and the emotions behind it all. We visit a town where harsh immigration laws are tested and hear how it changes neighbors.
Go back to Mexico, the F word. And my children were there, and they thought that we were in danger.
And we meet dreamers trying to survive the limitations of their home state.
It's very annoying, actually, more than anything, just not being able to do what other people can do and how people constantly take advantage of the fact that they have these rights.
It's the changing face of the United States in America's heartland, Nebraska. All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No se vayan. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we're taking our entire show to the state of Nebraska. Anybody who talks about Latino issues in the U.S. should be talking about Nebraska and Tennessee and Oklahoma and all of the states of the American heartland. Because those are the places where Latino populations have really exploded and made the greatest impact over the last decade. Nebraska's Latino population, for example, almost doubled between 2000 and 2010. Today, there are about 200,000 Latinos who live in the state, employed mainly in jobs like meatpacking and construction.
In a half mile, continue on to US 75 South.
Driving through South Omaha today, you'll find a thriving Mexican-American community filled with shops, taquerias, grocery stores, and colorful murals. A century ago, these same streets were home to Czech and Polish immigrants who came to work in the stockyards. With all change, however, comes resistance. Recently, immigration has become a major topic of debate in Nebraska, from the state house to town halls to diners throughout the state. The citizens of one rural Nebraska town have decided to take immigration laws into their own hands, no matter what the cost. That town is Fremont, Nebraska, and Latino USA producer Marlon Bishop has our story.
In a lot of ways, Fremont, Nebraska, population 26,167, could be any other mid-sized town somewhere in America. It has shady, pleasant streets lined with neat homes. It has a well-stocked Walmart and a sleepy Main Street. It has miles and miles of golden farmland all around, and more than 30 churches, spires reaching up into the wide Midwestern sky. Fremont also has something else no other town in the United States of America has. Ordinance 5165. Ordinance 5165 was designed to stop undocumented immigrants from settling here. It has two parts. Part one, it requires businesses to do a check on the immigration status of potential employees. Part two, and this is a part that's controversial, it forces all new renters to go down to the police department and pledge that they're in the country legally before they can live in town. Renting a home to undocumented immigrants is a punishable offense with a fine of $100 a day. The housing ordinance didn't come to Fremont without a fight. The battle started in 2008 and lasted 6 years. It drew in just about everyone in town.
It was kind of sad, and it was also like, wow, you know, because the whole community got divided.
Take it from Maggie Zarate, a longtime Fremont resident.
It was like the South or the North. It was that divided. Who was with who? Neighbors against neighbors.
And I'm ashamed of you people. I'm ashamed of Fremont. And I can't believe this is happening.
Tempers flared at local city council meetings.
You don't represent the people, you represent interests, special interest groups. and you ought to be ashamed yourselves.
Americans are being killed by illegal aliens every day.
How do they get by? Welfare and free health care.
The operative word here is illegals.
Suddenly, immigration was a huge issue in Fremont, and everyone had an opinion. But it wasn't always that way.
That was one of the things that we liked about Fremont, because they were like the most friendly, helpful people. So it was shocking when this came about.
The Zarates were one of the first Latino families to settle in Fremont in 2000. Back then, the town was 95% white.
You would see few Hispanic or Latino people. You know, it was kind of like, hi, you know, you saw somebody at the store and it was like, wow, there's another one.
Today, around 3,000 Latinos live here. That's 12% of the population. About a third of them may be undocumented. Driving around town, you can literally smell the reason they're coming here. Fremont is home to two large meatpacking plants, Hormel and Fremont Beef. They leave a sour smell that lingers in many parts of town. Here's longtime resident Michael Kuhns.
40 years ago when I got out of high school, those meatpacking jobs were the highest paying jobs in the community. So you had to know someone or be related to someone, you know, pull some strings for you to get hired.
Not anymore. Wages started going down at the plants over the last two decades. Some blame Reagan-era union busting for that. Others blame cheap immigrant labor. Either way, native-born Nebraskans stopped wanting to do these jobs, and Mexicans and Central Americans started pouring in to do them. That made Dawn Wiegert unhappy.
Just seeing the demographics that have changed in our school system, you know, a lot of the costs that we're incurring are going from leaving illegal immigration unchecked.
Dawn supports the housing ordinance. She says undocumented immigrants drain public resources by forcing schools to hire ESL teachers and courts to hire translators. She says immigrants don't pay taxes or emergency room bills. She points to nearby Schuyler, a town that's 60% Latino, as an example of what she doesn't want Fremont to become.
They have not addressed illegal immigration. And their town basically, I mean, the real estate has gone down there. And property taxes have gone up, and their school system now, it's, what, 90% Hispanic, and white people have had to either move out or stay there and pay the costs that the illegal immigrants aren't willing to pay.
Others in town shared her view. The thinking was, if the federal government won't enforce immigration law, we will. And so, to write the ordinance language, they reached out to this man.
Joining us now from Washington, Chris Kobach, the incoming Secretary of State of Kansas.
Kobach is a right-wing star, the author of Arizona's so-called Show Me Your Papers law, the Alabama self-deportation laws, and dozens of local anti-immigration initiatives around the country. Here he is on the show of conservative pundit Bill O'Reilly.
Well, the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, does give us as states the concept of state citizenship and the right to define who is a citizen in our state.
I think that illegal aliens are sneaking across the border so they can give birth and have their kids Americans so they can stay here. I'm with you in spirit.
Kobach's ordinance didn't pass the Fremont City Council, so newly minted conservative activists like Dawn and her brother-in-law John Wiegert got involved. They went door-to-door with a petition to bring the matter to a citywide referendum. That did pass.
That's when I was like, wow, and there's really people that are going, for some reason I feel racially going after us.
You need to go to bed, don't you?
No.
Yes.
No.
Natalie Urioste is a dental assistant. She lives in Fremont with her husband and three young children in a spacious Victorian home.
And Mom said maybe we're going to get a new puppy.
I've grown here since I was the age of about 8. And we've resided here for such a long time that it's like my hometown now.
But the housing ordinance changed things.
It made me feel very sad, very unwelcome. I felt like, you know, I work in Omaha and they tell me, why don't you move down here to Omaha? And I'm like, no, Fremont is where I want to be. But since all this started happening, it's like, I don't think Fremont is where I want to be now. I don't think I want my kids to grow up in Fremont.
As a U.S. citizen, Natalie wouldn't be legally affected by the ordinance, but she says she started to notice people treating her differently. One man got angry at her for speaking Spanish at the Walmart with her kids.
And I've had a gentleman tell me, why don't you speak to them in English? And I'm like, thank you, but they know both languages.
Maggie Zarate felt a change too. A stranger hurled insults at her and her kids outside their house.
Go back to Mexico, you know, the F word. That was the first time I think I've ever been told in such a tone. And my children were there, and they thought that we were in danger.
Civil rights groups sued Fremont. The city decided not to enforce the housing part of the ordinance while the cases worked their way through the courts. After all, similar laws had been struck down in Farmers Branch, Texas, and Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Then, in 2013, an appeals court decided to uphold Fremont's ordinance. The city now had no choice but to enforce it.
Good to meet with Scott.
Okay. Right in here, and Scott will be right in for you.
Great, thank you.
Scott Getchman is Fremont's mayor.
How are you?
How you doing?
Scott Getchman.
Very nice to meet you.
He's a Republican and the embodiment of Nebraska nice. But he's become something of a reviled figure for many residents of Fremont. He's against the housing ordinance.
I'm certainly not for illegal immigration, but I really don't want the citizens of Fremont to bear these costs.
The mayor says he'd been warned that Fremont's ordinance put the city at risk for losing federal fair housing grants to the tune of $7 million. Plus, he was concerned about how all the negative press would affect the town's future.
People get online, they look at Fremont, and if they see that you have an ordinance such as this, you know, they can perceive it as being hateful. And instead of looking at Fremont for their expansion economically, they look somewhere else.
So Getchman wanted to hold another vote on the housing ordinance.
Resolution calling for special election to repeal number 2 through 4, harboring illegal aliens.
And that's when things got really nasty.
For you, Bixby and Getchman, you guys set up there and act like a bunch of arrogant, pompous yahoos who spew misstatements and ignore the facts, and then you just sit mutely there and avoid accountability. I see that from President Obama all the time. I feel we've been attacked. The people that voted for this, we've been attacked by you. I don't particularly like the choice that was made for mayor, but I don't get a redo. I don't like the president. I don't get a redo.
Our elected officials need to remember that we, the people, are their constituents, not the illegal aliens.
Only a few got up to speak against the housing ordinance. One was Maggie Zarate.
I'm just concerned for my children, for their right, that these are third-generation American citizens, that they can't go outside to play because with the color of their skin when they were born here in Nebraska. As a parent, you should be outraged that we're trying to do this segregation in our city.
We could change the motto of the city. I suggest we probably should go with Fremont, Nebraska. If you're not white, you're not welcome. Thank you.
For housing ordinance supporters, the charges of racism stung.
This has nothing to do with racism. Racism, I mean, that's the last bastion of people who've run out of facts when they start using that label.
The testimony went on for almost 2 hours.
Anything else? Cast your votes.
Bixby?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Stang?
Yes.
Coons?
Yes.
7 ayes, 1 nay, Your Honor. Motion carries.
Item 22. Resolution approving ballot language for special election appeal.
The vote to reconsider the housing ordinance passed. That was back in November. The people of Fremont would vote on it again in February.
The story of the battle over immigration in Fremont, Nebraska continues. Coming up, things get tense as Fremont goes back to the vote.
There's kind of a line drawn in the sand now. Are you in favor of the ordinance or are you against the ordinance?
Which side will prevail? Stay with us on Latino USA. No se vayan.
My lady's talking, leaving talk. That painful, unbelieving talk. The words that make you feel you're losing all the love that you've been using, kind of leaving talk. Oh, yeah. The lady's talking, leaving talk. She doesn't have to say a single word, 'cause through the silence it can still be heard. Oh, by the way, she isn't smiling when she looks up in the sky, just thinking leaving thoughts. Oh, yeah. My lady's talking, leaving talk. I can't believe it's really happening. The thought of losing her is killing me. wish I could neglect it, but I can't help but...
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We've been talking about Nebraska, specifically a mid-sized town about an hour out of Omaha called Fremont, where citizens voted in a strict anti-immigrant housing ordinance. The ordinance punishes landlords for renting to undocumented people, essentially making it impossible for them to live in the town. When we left off, it was November 2013, and the city council had just decided to bring the issue to a public vote for the second time. Our producer, Marlon Bishop, picks up the story.
The vote to reconsider Fremont's housing ordinance was set for February. As the date approached, the town became increasingly tense, and the attacks more personal. In the comments on the Fremont Tribune website, Mayor Getchman, who opposed the ordinance, was called a lot of names. Deceitful, traitorous, fear-mongering, power-hungry, greedy, arrogant, unethical. There were rumors of kids fighting in the schoolyard over the ordinance. Windows busted out with rocks, a dead cat left in a yard. Personal relationships were tested.
My wife and I don't agree on it.
Michael Kunz is one of the city council members that voted to bring the issue to a second referendum.
I've got close friends. They know me. They've known me for a long time. We love each other. But when it comes to this issue, they question my loyalty.
In the end, Fremont voters passed the ordinance a second time by a margin of 20%, even higher than before. Since then, you could say life has returned to normal in Fremont, but it's a new normal.
There's kind of a line drawn in the sand now. Are you in favor of the ordinance or are you against the ordinance?
Virginia Meyer helped lead the charge against the ordinance. The thing about living in a small town like Fremont is that your political arch rivals are also your neighbors. They're people you see every day at church, at school, at the Walmart.
There is this just feeling of like, I can't go to the store and run into people who I know feel so strongly against this.
I've lived here since 1972.
Michael Kunz.
You know, in all those years, I've never seen anything occur in the community, you know, that's kind of brought the community down to the level that it's at now.
The whole thing does make you wonder why a seemingly small housing regulation became such a huge dividing point in this otherwise polite Midwestern town. Some say it's about people just getting fired up by all the anti-immigrant rhetoric going around. Others say it's frustration towards the Obama administration, taken out on a local level. But something else was going on, too. When you get down to it, the debate wasn't about housing anymore. It was about the very soul of the town. Even though he voted against the ordinance, Michael Kunz relates to the sense of displacement some people in Fremont are feeling.
It's a little hard for our culture in the Midwest to easily accept another culture coming in that doesn't want to assimilate into our society, into our culture. It's extremely challenging, you know, basically for those of us in the Middle Ages. That's just not something that we're used to.
For the pro-ordinance people, the issue is also bigger than a single ordinance in a single town. For them, ideologically speaking, Fremont is just the start. John Wiegert wants to see what happened here, start a chain reaction of similar ordinances all over America.
And I think we've got this stirred up in Nebraska.
Yeah.
And hopefully with what we've done here, some other towns will do what we're doing. And that'll put pressure on the states around us. And hopefully, you know, our national government's not doing a thing.
Yeah.
So it's got to go back to the people.
Now, in order to live in Fremont, you have to go to the police station and sign a document saying you are a legal resident. The town is even divided on the impact this will have. Virginia Meyer thinks that ultimately it's not a winning strategy.
Here in the Midwest and Great Plains, we are losing young people, and towns like Fremont don't have the luxury of turning people away. We don't have the luxury of being unwelcoming communities because we will shrivel up and die. And that's what I don't want to see happen here.
Meanwhile, Dawn Wiegert thinks the housing ordinance will actually attract people.
No, the other side will tell you different. They're like, we're losing all these young people because, you know, we're not providing the jobs and we look like we're a real racist community. I feel the exact opposite. I've talked to some of our friends and their kids haven't come back to Fremont because they know the cost of a city that doesn't address illegal immigration is going to become a sanctuary city, really.
Still, even after all that's happened, it's hard to tell if the ordinance will really keep undocumented people away from Fremont. The meatpacking plants lie outside the city limits. So do the trailer parks where many undocumented workers live. Maggie Zarate says she knows Latino families who have left town because of the ordinance, but most have stayed, regardless of their immigration status.
It's like you see the tornadoes, you see the big clouds, and, you know, we're all going to fly away, and then it passed, and it's like, we're right now, I think we're in like that after the storm calm. It's calm, but it's like too calm because it's like makes you wonder what's going to happen.
Drive down Main Street in Fremont and you'll see most of the old businesses have closed down. Mexican bakeries and a Salvadoran pupusa shop have sprung up in their stead. A few churches advertise worship in Spanish. Statues of the Virgin of Guadalupe dot front lawns in some neighborhoods. Like I said, in many ways, Fremont could be any mid-sized town, somewhere in America. Changing.
Latino USA producer Marlon Bishop with that story from Fremont, Nebraska. In the story we just heard, ordinary folks from the town of Fremont were getting pretty worked up about immigration. In varying degrees, that's happening all over the American heartland. But more than anything, the arguments you hear are economic. So we decided to follow the money and take a closer look at the economics of immigration in Nebraska. To start off, we visited one Omaha business owner with a pretty strong opinion on the matter.
This is the easiest tour.
Wow.
Our little balcony here.
Oh my God, whoa!
So,
Wow, this is a pretty huge backyard.
Yeah, so we run about 20 landscape crews out of here every day.
Dan Mulhall owns a plant nursery and landscaping firm called Mulhall's. He employs about 200 seasonal employees who usually work for 9 months every year. Many of them are from Mexico.
So this is a fabulous day to talk about why our immigrant workforce is so valuable to us, because it's not a nice day. It's raining, it's 38 degrees, and these guys are just getting after it and going.
Mulhall is a Republican, and he believes immigration laws should be reformed.
The problem is the system and the law that hasn't, you know, kept pace with the demographics of our country.
Nebraska's Latino population has increased rapidly over the last two decades, now at almost 200,000 people. And there are many who believe if it weren't for the Latino immigration wave, the state would be in trouble.
So Nebraska is desperately a state that loses population, that if it was not for immigration, it would have lost population in the last two censuses.
That's Lourdes Gobea, a sociologist at the University of Nebraska. And according to her research, that immigration is vital to the region's economy.
The data is incontrovertible. Immigrants contribute $2.5 billion plus a year to production to the state. They generate nearly 20,000 jobs, and they pay taxes a little above of what they receive in benefits.
Take ranching and meatpacking, the economic backbone of many Nebraska towns.
Who's they are, the lot numbers, is there a lot?
Chuck Folkin owns a feedlot in a tiny town called Lee, just a few hours' drive from Omaha. Immigration has been on Folkin's mind a lot lately.
In the beef industry, I am particularly sensitive to it because I've watched them grade my cattle and process my beef. And those facilities would not run today without those immigrant workers in there.
Folkin remembers an immigration raid at a nearby meatpacking plant in December of 2006. The raid slowed production and ended up hurting Folkin's business. And that wasn't all.
I don't remember the number, but it was about 20 children that were left here with no parents. That close to Christmas, that just seemed like a very challenging thing for the whole community and for the whole part of Nebraska. And that was one of the things that made me think that cattlemen need to be concerned about this issue.
Folkin, who's also a Republican, came to lead a task force on immigration for the Nebraska Cattlemen's Association, a trade group representing the state's beef industry. Last year, they passed a resolution supporting immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship. It was beef, after all, that brought many of the immigrants to Nebraska in the first place.
Lots and lots of efforts to lure people out of their homes in Mexico to come work for the meatpacking plants. And the rest is history.
You see, the meatpacking industry went through a crisis in the late 1970s. The jobs stopped being attractive to locals. So industry leaders revamped the sector in the 80s. They started actively recruiting in towns and villages in Mexico.
Other plants smuggled them in. We had a case in Omaha that where a plant was complicit in the smuggling, and the managers were taken to court, and unfortunately, the only ones who pay were the immigrants themselves.
When opponents of immigration want hard numbers to support their arguments, they turn to FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Their spokesperson, Ira Melman, says industries like meatpacking support immigration because it's good for business.
The people who benefit are the direct employers. The people who lose are the taxpayers and the workers who used to do those jobs.
In fact, both sides agree that business owners are the ones that benefit the most from the low-wage jobs many Latino immigrants do. We did reach out to the Nebraska Association of Meat Processors for their response, but we didn't hear back. The businesses may see higher corporate profits, but FAIR says average taxpayers pick up the bill by paying for things like school and medical care for immigrants.
So what we are doing is simply creating a subsidized labor pool for a lot of industries.
FAIR wants a return to high-paying jobs in all sectors of the economy, especially agriculture. They say this would attract American-born workers, and they want to enforce the laws that will make immigrant workers leave the country on their own.
If you make it clear to people that even if you can get into the United States illegally, you're not going to get a job because the employers understand that the government is out there policing the labor force and that they're going to hold the employer accountable and make it hurt if we catch them, that the jobs will begin to dry up.
But the idea that immigrants will leave and that wages will just shoot up is very likely an economic fantasy. And several studies by the University of Nebraska found that immigrants in the state do pay sales, income, and gas taxes. In fact, Govea thinks many people don't realize just how dependent the Nebraska economy is on Latinos.
And Nebraska has had a history that is not one of these rabid anti-immigrant xenophobic states or racist states.
She believes the anti-immigrant sentiment that has taken over Nebraska comes from outside the state.
Politicians from outside the state figured out that this was a good place to test some of these ordinances. This was a good place to steer the xenophobic sentiments and build political careers around them.
Nebraska will remain a predominantly white state well into the 21st century. But in a state where the population was shrinking, Latino children are now a big contribution to new population growth. These children just might be the solution to Nebraska's demographic trouble. So, just how drastically are the demographics of the United States and the heartland changing? And what kind of long-term socioeconomic impact will the new majority have? To find out, we bring you our first By the Numbers segment with award-winning journalist Guy Garcia of the consumer research firm Ethnifacts. Hey, Guy.
How you doing?
So, Guy, you've been working on this really cool data project. It's called America Reimagined. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, America Reimagined is basically updating the clock on a multicultural majority America. And by our measure, it happens on August 22nd at 7:56 p.m. nationally.
You are saying that this year, the United States will become, by the numbers, a multicultural majority nation.
Exactly. Because what we're saying is we're taking the census information and adding to it what we know are the behaviors, the mixing, the merging by cohabitation, by relation by having children or relatives of different races and ethnicities, and a certain percentage of people in very high-density ethnic communities, we know that they are part of that group, that they have the same attitudes and values of
and so
a multicultural
they're included
majority.
In this notion of becoming a multicultural majority nation.
Yes, they are.
Is essentially people who are white and who are cool with multiculturalism.
Well, and they may be not as white as they used to be. One of the outcomes of this is a redefinition of the increasing diversity of what it means to be white. The melting pot is over. You know, at the very most, you could say, well, if there ever was a melting pot, the pot itself is melting.
So these terms, multicultural, white, minority, majority, how soon until the lingo kind of catches up with the data about who we really are in this country?
What we're seeing is both ends want to shift towards being 100% Latino and 100% American simultaneously. They want to own them both. They don't see it as either or. They don't see themselves as half and half. They don't see themselves as eventually becoming totally American, and they feel it's their right, and they're doing it. And especially the younger multiculturals, that's the world they live in.
So, Guy, earlier in our show, we had a story about a town in Nebraska called Fremont, where there has clearly been a lot of resistance to this Latino population that has been settling there. So, from the research that you have seen, what sets a place like Fremont apart from other small towns in America?
Well, sociology is starting to become very clear that proximity is not just living nearby, but it's also a length of time of exposure. There was a study about two small towns in Iowa that had exactly the same demographic mix, mostly white. They both had recently an influx of immigrants from Latin America. One town reacted very allergically to it. The other town, much more embracing of it. So they tried to find out, well, what was the difference? Because by all other measures, they seemed identical. And they found out that some immigrants from, in this case, Asia, had come 20-some years earlier, and a younger generation was exposed to them, and the older generation got used to having people of different race and ethnicity. And by the time the second wave came, they were sort of inoculated from this kind of knee-jerk racist, you know, exclusionary effect. The other town didn't have that experience, so they reacted in kind of a more stereotypical way. William Gibson, the writer, said, you know, the future is here, but it's just not evenly distributed yet. So that's what's going on.
How do you bring that upon communities? I mean, if you're saying, look, Fremont and every other place in the heartland is going to change demographically, how do they go about being exposed if they're closed off? Can you force that? How does that happen?
Well, you can't force it. You can escape it, but only to a certain point. And increasingly, the numbers show you're going to have a relative, you're going to have a cousin, a son, a daughter, a nephew, a niece who is Latino or gay or Black, and grandchildren and nephews and nieces that are mixed race. Mixed race Americans is the fastest growing segment of the entire population. It's exploding. Anyone who says that they're oblivious or they see no signs of a multicultural America really has to be, in some kind of a sensory deprivation tank.
Guy Garcia, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you.
Guy Garcia is the president of New Mainstream Initiatives for the consumer research firm Ethnifacts. To see the Ethnifacts Culture Edge Clock, visit latinousa.org. And let us know what you think. Coming up on Latino USA.
I'm still going to drive regardless. Yeah, I have fear of getting stopped by the cops, but that's just not something that can stop me from my dreams.
The Nebraska Dreamers Who Drive, with or without permission. Stay with us. No se vayan.
Outsider.
Welcome back to Your Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
It makes no sense to expel talented young people who, for all intents and purposes, are Americans. They've been raised as Americans, understand themselves to be part of this country.
That's President Barack Obama in a June 2012 speech announcing DACA, or the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. It's the policy that temporarily allows certain young immigrants, known as Dreamers, to legally reside and work in the U.S. It also allows them to obtain driver's licenses, or at least it's supposed to.
Nebraska is one of two states that won't allow these young people to get driver's licenses.
Amy Miller is a lawyer with the Nebraska ACLU.
And this is purely a policy being driven entirely by the governor. Our state legislature never debated the issue. It's not part of state law. It was the unilateral act of the governor alone ordering the Department of Motor Vehicles to deny driver's licenses to DACA recipients.
Miller is part of a case against the state of Nebraska challenging the denial of driver's licenses to DACA youth.
The idea that we would punish these young people and to tell them, despite the fact they're high achievers academically, despite the fact that they want to contribute back, no, you can't drive. And in Nebraska, with our spread out geography and our weather, the reality is it is going to be very impossible to get anything accomplished if you can't drive.
We wanted to know more, so we got in touch with a group of Nebraska Dreamers. They agreed to meet us at the Heartland Workers Center, located in South Omaha.
I live in New York City. I don't own a car. I rarely drive. I don't think I could get away living in Omaha if I didn't have a car. What do you do? How do you get around?
You borrow a car from someone, you buy a car, and then you drive.
This is Julio. He's 23, brought here when he was just 11. By the way, none of the Dreamers we spoke to gave us their full names, since they're talking about doing things that could get them in trouble.
You are at the risk of getting stopped, and then police can ask you for a driver's license, and you don't have one, and that's a big problem.
Almost every Dreamer present told us that, license or not, they still drive.
There's just no other choice to it.
That's Dania. She's 17.
I'm still going to drive regardless. Yeah, I have fear of getting stopped by the cops, and it's a ticket, and it might be a possibility to be deported, but that's just not something that can stop me from my dreams.
Not having a driver's license isn't just inconvenient. Anna, who works as an executive assistant at a nonprofit, says it can keep Dreamers stuck in the informal sector where many Nebraska Latinos work.
If you're applying for a good job, you get a job offer. And then all of a sudden, okay, yeah, you got the job, but guess what? We need your driver's license.
But it turns out some of the Dreamers actually do have driver's licenses. They just aren't from Nebraska.
I got my driver's license in Iowa.
That's David, a 24-year-old student who builds fences for a living.
And how did you do that?
I just changed my address to Iowa.
How do you feel about, because you don't live in Iowa?
No, I don't. And I know that's wrong. But you're always afraid that you're going to get pulled over and get tickets. And those tickets are not, they're like almost $200, and I can't afford that.
They say using a false address to obtain an Iowa license is pretty common.
Well, we got the permit. You got rid of the biggest fear we had, being stopped and being sent back to your country. But it didn't get rid of any of the other fears. Like, right now, we're breaking laws by going to Iowa and getting our driver's license.
That's Jessica. She recently got into a car accident with her Iowa license and plates. Now, she's worried she might be committing insurance fraud as well. And all of it could come back to haunt her in the future. For example, when it's time to renew her DACA status.
Breaking one law, you break another one and another one and another one. It's like a chain, like a circle that just goes around and around and around, and it never stops.
But what the Dreamers don't understand is why. If they are legally allowed to live and work in Nebraska under DACA, why won't the state government let them drive?
Probably trying to make money with the tickets.
Sometimes I feel like this is just a way of them trying to provoke Obama, and we're just in the middle of it. You know, like we're nothing.
The answer, they say, is that they just think they're pieces in a game of political chess. But that isn't a consolation for someone like Diana. She immigrated when she was 3 years old. Now she's a 17-year-old high school senior. And not being able to get a driver's license is just another thing that reminds her, you aren't a normal teenager.
You know, other people, my peers, getting their driver's license, their permits, you know, starting off, and people still ask me, like, oh, have you gotten your license yet? And I'm just like, no, I haven't gotten, but I don't tell them, you know, necessarily why. It's very annoying, actually, more than anything, just not being able to do what other people can do and how people constantly take advantage of the fact that they have these rights.
And it's bigger than licenses. Diana hopes to go to college next year and study graphic design. The other day, a friend asked her if she heard back from the federal financial aid program.
And she's just like, oh, well, haven't you filed your FAFSA yet? And I'm like, even if I were to file it, I can't get anything back. You know, I don't think people understand what it's like to be undocumented.
What is it like to be undocumented?
I feel like you just feel very alone. More than anything, you just feel very alone. I can't move forward because I don't have these rights. The only thing that's holding me back is that I don't have the financial aid to go off to college. So what do I do? Do I get stuck in a community college because I don't qualify enough for a state school, or I don't qualify or have enough money to go to a private school?
The emotions and frustration are so strong in this room. These kids all say they really, truly love Nebraska. And all they want is a chance to work hard and contribute to their state and to their country. This is Governor Heinemann's last year in office. If the ACLU lawsuit fails, the next governor could overturn the ban with the stroke of a pen. Youth leader Viridiana Almanza hopes that the state's next leader understands just how valuable the Dreamers are, or could be one day, if given the chance.
I think Nebraska needs to understand that, like she said, they're not going to step here, they're going to go over to Iowa and be doctors over there, or somewhere else.
And wouldn't it be nice for a change if talented young people decided to stay in the Cornhusker State? Well, we have dedicated this episode to talking about Latinos in Nebraska, but of course, they aren't the first immigrants to come to the state. Nebraska has always been home to a host of ethnic groups. There are Germans, Swedes, and Czechs, just to name a few. Latino USA contributor Peggy Lowe is from an Irish family that came to Nebraska to farm. Now, her mom is helping the most recent influx of immigrants by teaching ESL to Colombian and Mexican meatpackers at night school. Peggy Lowe recently visited her mom's class.
And we're going to try and do what class? Speak English, please.
That's my mom, Bonnie Lowe, a tiny firecracker in tennis shoes. She's a retired teacher. She started out at age 17 in the proverbial one-room schoolhouse near the Missouri River.
Okay, what does a noun name, class? A person,
place.
Or a thing.
Tonight, she's in a well-lit classroom with a colorful map of the world on the wall and a computer in the corner. We're at Southeast Community College in Nebraska City, a town of about 7,000 an hour south of Omaha. She has three students, Rigo, Eliana, and Andrea.
Remember the song we used to sing about English? We are going to speak English. We are going to speak English. And we went on and on and on, didn't we? And at the end, we said, ole!
I grew up watching my mom teach, so I know that singing is one of her tricks.
What about a place? What's a place?
Colombia.
Colombia, yes. We really think that's a good place, don't we?
I've always been attracted to stories about immigrants. I think it's because my family is Irish, and we have a strong sense of being from another place. Over there, while also being very much a part of this place right here. The here part, I knew, even as a child, was better than the there part. But together, they made us who we are.
Okay, are we ready? Are we ready, class?
For Mom, education was the key, the thing that made her life better than her mother's, the thing that would make her kids' lives better than her own. That's why she's still at it at 80.
My name is Andrea Hincapie.
Well, my mom talks about you all the time.
Thank you.
You are her favorite student.
Yeah. Andrea is from Bogota and arrived here with her husband and kids about 4 years ago, joining her parents and assorted aunts, uncles, and cousins.
I came here because my family is here, live here.
Andrea works in a frigid section of the Cargill factory where she pushes heavy boxes of meat up and out the line. It's intense physical work with few breaks. She has to wear several jackets just to stay warm. The women often suffer shoulder injuries. But it's a good job, Andrea says, better than she could do in Colombia.
So what do you hope your life looks like here since you've decided to stay here in Nebraska City? And what do you hope your children's life looks like?
Yeah, better life for my children. It's better opportunity.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
A better life. We don't know the particulars of why my great-grandparents came here from Ireland.
We grew up in a generation that did not talk. I mean, they never talked about things that were really important.
But they wore their Irish as a badge of honor. My people were farmers and waitresses, gas station owners, and teachers.
Let's let Andrea start. Tell her what you have here.
Okay.
She will start.
After brownies and sodas, we've moved on to the grammar bingo game. It's based on the Where's Waldo books. The students learn prepositions, looking for Waldo around and down and over and under. Andrea sits in the front row, helping the others.
Is Andrea your assistant?
Yes, she is. Well, in fact, when I'm not here, she just does it. Yeah, better than I, because she has both languages.
I ask Andrea how to say teacher in Espanol. Andrea, the profesora. I can feel Mom rooting for her. She loves the fact that Andrea's daughter is just a junior in high school, but has already signed up for college.
So you admire Andrea?
Oh, I do. I admire her so much. And she loves to come to class. So, you know, you need people like Andrea to pass that on to the rest of the family.
Do you think you have something in common with Andrea?
We came from immigrants. She immigrated. That your family did the same thing hundreds of years ago, and you think about where your family is now.
Andrea says she likes it here, the smallness of Nebraska City. Folks can be cliquish, though. I ask Mom about this, how she thinks immigrants are treated here.
I think ours are welcomed, sort of. I think we aren't as welcoming as we should be. Let's put it that way. I don't believe it's as bad as it was, say, 50 years ago. Everything goes in such small increments.
When I was a kid, I helped my mom at school. I often corrected papers or cleaned the blackboards. And I made so many bulletin boards out of so much construction paper, I can still see those cheery messages, like some kind of Pinterest page from the past. One of Mom's favorites said, "Bloom where you are planted." Trite, perhaps, but it strikes me that these new immigrants with strong new roots, we'll get that chance. For Latino USA, I'm Peggy Lowe in Nebraska City, Nebraska.
Bingo!
Yes. Yay.
From one Nebraska old schooler to another, we turn now to Dr. Marty Ramirez. Before the recent wave of immigrants from Latin America ignited the local activism scene, there was Marty. Marty was born in Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and has been organizing around Chicano rights in the state for decades. For Sabiduría this week, or Words of Wisdom, Marty spoke with us about his struggles and triumphs in Nebraska's changing social landscape.
I am Mauricio Martin Ramirez, but probably better known as Marty. They changed my name way back when I was a kid, so they said, "We can't pronounce Mauricio, so we'll call you Marty." I was born in Scottsbluff, Nebraska in 1945. We worked hard in the fields, in the sugar beet field, and in the fall in the potato fields. And so every summer, until after my freshman year in college, I was still a migrant worker. I really wanted to be a professional baseball player. I loved baseball that much. So I had the American dream mentality, you know, grow up and be somebody. But the reality was a totally different story. When we were nearing graduation, now, Mexicans at that time, we only had four career paths. One was to go to Denver and Omaha to find jobs. One was to join the military, and one was to stay in Scotts Bluff. So when I graduated, I said, well, I have another year of baseball, and then I'm going to join the military. And then they contacted the baseball coach at Shadron, and all of a sudden, he says, you're going to college? Being an obedient Catholic boy? I says, okay. I graduated in August of 1967. Meanwhile, in the country, the civil rights movement was at its full force. It was now beginning to filter into Nebraska and Scotts Bluff, and so we began to organize. So we began to attend meetings, school board meetings, and city council. And they said, who are these guys? Where did these come from? Mexicans aren't supposed to be speaking this way, you know, demanding and asking for services and rights. Well, we got our streets paved. We got lights, street lights. We got cable TV. I mean, Latinos are now the largest minority in Nebraska. So things are changing. On the other hand, they're passing legislation, laws, anti-immigrant like you wouldn't believe. And we're over here shaking our head. I said, my goodness, we're going back in time. So we're making progress, but in some ways we're kind of standing still, which is the challenge, and that's why I continue to be involved in advocacy. I love Nebraska.
Marty Ramirez is a retired psychologist who worked for the University of Nebraska at Lincoln for 38 years. And, mis queridos, that's a wrap from the Heartland. Latino USA was produced this week by Marlon Bishop, Daisy Rosario, A.C. Valdez, Lita Hartman, Michael Simon Johnson, Mitra Caboli, and Camilo Vargas. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music consultant. Special thanks to Teresa Barron McKigney and the University of Nebraska, Metropolitan Community College and Metropolitan Community College TV, KIOS FM 91.5 in Omaha, and Sergio Sosa. Our show was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week, and in the meantime, we'll see you on Facebook, Twitter, and I'll see you on my Instagram. Hasta la próxima!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
In 19, it says 2008, stupid.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring with the Floor Finder app for iPad and iPhone. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com. And the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org. And the Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems, at pewtrusts.org. This is NPR.